Do you have a tough challenge with your supply chain or logistics? Logur is the intelligent partner that works globally with manufacturers, retailers, and logistics businesses. We help our customers define, buy, and safely implement solutions across the supply chain. If you want a more sustainable future for your supply chain, visit loguru.co.uk. Complete end-to-end satisfaction guaranteed.
Coming up in this episode.
So they're in a crisis at this point. What are they going to do? They got all their office staff to come out to the warehouse, but they had like the CFO of the business was out picking boxes and they managed to do it. They had none of their normal team there to support them. I remember I got a phone call from the CFO one night asking me a question of how to run a manifest. They managed to fumble their way through it and kept the lights on.
The Logistics Collective podcast is a series focused on the logistics industry, where there are many incredible stories to be told. We'll be speaking with those who've worked and are working within the industry today. What have been their experiences, good and bad, since joining? And would they recommend a career in the industry to others? Here's your host, Malcolm Pope.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Logistics Collective. Within our podcast, we sometimes focus our attention on really interesting and novel innovations within the industry. And today, I have something exciting to discover with you. My guest today is really, really far away. But not just in distance, but also far away from the normal of technology development for logistics and supply chain in the most positive of ways. The distance is 17,000 kilometres away, or 10,570 miles. And as to the lead in technology, we'll come to that. So, from an operational background in warehousing and logistics, our guest developed a passion to make systemization more elegant, agile, and from a point of implementation and use, easy. We welcome Thomas Jackson, founder and managing director of Tomax Technology. Hello, Thomas. How are you doing?
Hi, Malcolm. Thank you for the very kind introduction. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm absolutely fine. And as I very often say to people, I'm rarely kind, I'm always honest. So there we go. Where are you speaking to us from? We're hearing a bit of an accent here, Thomas. So, you know, could you help us out with that?
This evening, I am in home in Sydney, Australia. I spend a lot of my time all over the world, but tonight I am home in Australia.
Well, that's a fantastic place to be. Certainly, Sydney is my favourite city in the world, without a shadow of a doubt. I still want to come back, and it's been all too long.
You're welcome anytime.
Thank you very much. I'll take you up on that. But when did you first become interested in logistics and supply chain?
That's a bit of a big question, and I've got to go back a little bit before then to sort of set the scene a bit. So originally I had a very strong interest in electronics and engineering and all of those sorts of pursuits. So I originally started studying electronics engineering, and I fell into running a warehouse. And I don't think any of us ever wake up in the morning and decide we're going into operations. I think we all fall into it one way or another. And nope. I like to say that we were doing everything wrong. So to set the scene, this is about the mid-2000s. And by that point, you'd think there'd be some technology running an operation. Well, we had none of that. On each desk, you had four computers. On the first computer, you'd print out your purchase order. Then you'd turn to your second computer and key it in to get your invoice. You turn to your third computer to get your freight labels. You turn to your fourth computer to get your retail SSCC labels. You'd put a paperclip on the top and hope and pray that the warehouse got it right once it went outside. And occasionally they did. But that was, to me, where I first came into operations. We're still doing handwritten consignment notes. We had no idea what was going on. If we had a customer calling us asking about their order, the answer was, well, it's either in my warehouse, in transit, or in your store, so we'll try and find it, I guess. Clearly, that wasn't going to work very well. I started making a few little scripts to make System A talk to System B and automatically fill in some paperwork here and a few Excel spreadsheets there, and got to a point where we had something that sort of resembled a system. And with that, I was able to go to the business and say, hey, we need to get serious here. We need to go out to market, get a solution, because surely somebody somewhere in the world has solved this problem. We're not a unique business here. But it actually turned out that we had a bit of uniqueness to us, because we could do anything from filling a full truckload of a single product into a major retailer, all the way down to I could send a spare part 1 by 1 by 1 centimeter to your house. I could do a mixed case, I could do mixed pallet, I could do all of the above on the same day, but none of the systems really catered for that breadth of process. And then we start throwing in extra requirements like QA requirements and the like. And we just couldn't find something that was going to be able to do what we needed, at least not without an enormous amount of customization and cost. So I said, fine, I'll build it myself. So I did. And originally, none of this was meant to be a product that was going to be marketed. It was all just to solve my own problem. But more and more people saw it and said, honey, this is all right. Can we buy a license to it? And fast forwarding to today, we're now all around the world.
So when you say all around the world, Ian, give me a view of the geographic spread.
Sure. So obviously we do a lot of work in Australia being our home, where we've got offices dotted around the country, but we also have wholly owned subsidiaries in New Zealand, Singapore, US, Canada, and the UK.
Okay. And in terms of, and maybe this is rushing ahead a little bit, if we were looking at what a typical customer of Tomax might look like, and is there such a thing as a typical customer? Give us some idea what they look like at the moment.
You're right. There is no such thing as a typical customer. The closest thing to a typical customer for us is somebody that has some complexity to their business, which frankly is everybody out there these days. So we've got businesses that's everything from a one-man band operating out of a tin shed through to large multinational corporations. We've got clients that the biggest piece of technology they have is a 10-year-old RF device that they walk around the warehouse with. We've got customers with multi-million dollar robotics and automation systems that we're controlling as well. So, and that's all, it's important to note that that's all with one product. It's not that we've got multiple different products or anything like that. It's all under the one product that can have the modules swapped in and swapped out to suit whatever each client requires.
So clearly your product is hugely adaptable and scalable.
Yeah, we like to describe it as a series of Lego bricks. So it means that when it comes to building the system out for a client, instead of we've got to go back to square one each time, or it's very rigid, we just start saying, okay, well, this client needs this brick and this brick. So for instance, nearly every client will need the inventory brick because most clients will want to manage inventory in their warehouse, although there's some that don't. On the other side, less clients would have the robotics and automation brick because they don't need it. But it's always sitting there so that if one of those clients who doesn't have it in the future decides they do need it, we can just pull it out and clip it in.
So I just wanted to say that there are other toy building bricks available. And I've heard you use this comparison before, and it just really struck me is that, you know, you need to have your own toy building bricks, your Tomax building bricks that you can actually say this is how it all links and fits together. I want to reverse you back a bit. So there you are. You're working within a warehousing environment and you're going, hell, you know, why does this lot not communicate together? And you then decided, I'm going to write, I'm going to innovate, I've got it fixed. And then somebody else comes and has a look at it and says, I want some of that. And you begin to roll. But what was the key breakover? Was there a key breakover that said, "Hey, I'm now going to start my own business. I'm going to be founder and MD of it, and let's go ahead."
Yeah.
What was your motivation?
Look, I'll admit one of the very big motivations was that one of the people who saw the software in action was one of the senior leadership team of Australia Post, so our equivalent of your Royal Mail. When you have people like that coming and knocking on the door, you start to realize that you're probably heading in the right direction with the product.
It would certainly seem to. It would certainly seem to. And I know you've got some very interesting stories to tell around that. And almost you've been very, very kind to share, I guess, some forward development. It's always nice to talk to a business that has got, if you like, a pipeline of innovation that is coming along and that, you know, they're willing to come and talk to you about. I'm not suggesting that we're going to, we're going to reveal anything during this meeting. But nevertheless, please be assured that there's some damn interesting stuff coming down the line.
It certainly is.
So let's sort of bring us back to, let's talk about the legacy warehouse management systems, of which we know there are many and multiple. And do you feel that the problems that we have needed to solve in the supply chain have really changed since the initial development of warehouse management system software? And I guess, do you think they're going to continue to change? And you know, will that rate of change accelerate?
I think the answer to that is certainly. So just looking at my own personal experience running a warehouse, when I first got into the industry, and as I said earlier, the mid-2000s, our standard order, so I'll talk about one particular retail that we were supplying. They would give you an order on the first of the month, and that was your order for the month. So one big, nice order, great. We knew that was coming, and get it out the door. Then that same retailer, and this is all in the period of a few years, that same retailer came to us and said, okay, we want to order fortnightly now. So suddenly my handling costs effectively doubled overnight, because not only have I now got to pay two sets of freight, I've got to touch every product twice. But it gets even worse than that, because when they were ordering once a month, a lot of my picks were going to be nice, easy, full case or full pallet picks. Suddenly, that customer's now turned into a split case pick or split pallet pick, which that's naturally a lot more expensive. Then that turned into they wanted to order weekly from us, which that got even worse. And then that turned into we'll order whenever we feel like it. It might be twice a week, might be three times a week, might be once a month. But by the way, you better be ready for it, and you better make sure that you meet your SLAs. So suddenly you've got this thing which used to be relatively simple. If we talk about the, in inverted commas, old-fashioned warehousing of you pick up a pallet and put it on a truck, or you know, worst case, you pick up a full case pick and put it on a truck, you could afford to have a lot of those, a lot of that that wasn't quite as streamlined as it needs to be today. Because today, particularly with the, how obviously we've had the explosion in e-commerce and fueled by COVID lockdowns and all of that as well, suddenly that cost to serve and effort to serve has gone up significantly. So if we've got a process that, but let's say for argument's sake that you had a process that took even 10 seconds in order to do. If you're filling, let's say, 100 orders a day because they're full truckload orders, you can get away with that. Turn that same volume into e-commerce orders, that might be 10,000 orders. That will just sink a business. So, I only see that getting more and more. And particularly, we start getting into other complexities as well now. So we've obviously got, particularly with that e-commerce boom, we're now talking about staffing availability. We're talking about freight network capability. And then a key thing that is really starting to come to the forefront now is what's the environmental impact of supply chain?
And there is a truth. I have my little soapbox I go and climb up on occasion, and I'll go and have a little bit of a rant in terms of there's an awful lot of rear view mirror gazing in terms of what is sustainable and what is not. And for me, is if you're serious about sustainability, and even if you're serious about having really happy employees and happy people, those are the algorithms that should actually be in the core of systems, as well as the normal ones, which, you know, I've got to be legally compliant. There's some notion of quality or service within there. And of course, you know, perhaps the true position is cost or maybe value, but mainly cost.
Of course, the unifying driver of all business.
Yeah. Yep. I think it should be the result of doing everything properly. You know, I've always subscribed about, you know, if you do everything in the right way, you'll get a right and good profitable result. But I'm occasionally lonely on that. So, what Thomas, what do you think differentiates the solutions that Tomex provides from, you know, your longer established competition?
Yeah, so I'll start with the operator experience, and I'll move sort of towards the back end from there. So sure. The key thing is, and it astounds me every day, that a lot of the systems that are going around are still the old-fashioned green screens. Now, if we talk about a continuing casualization of the workforce, and if we're going to talk about soapboxes, I've got opinions on that topic, but we'll move right along from there. If you've got a rapidly turning over staff profile in your warehouse, and you've got a system that's really hard to use, that's going to cause you problems. Like I was assisting a couple of years ago with UAT for a client that was moving to us for another system. And at one point we were doing testing in the old system and the new system just to validate the processes were working together. At one point, I turned to their CPUs and I said, I own a WMS company and I have no idea how this system is supposed to work. Because it was like at the end of every order, you had to press like F2, F5, up arrow, enter, enter, 2, enter. Like it was impossible. Whereas we make it really simple. You scan the right barcode, the screen goes green. You scan the wrong barcode, screen goes red. Nice, easy, human understandable things that it sounds really simple when I put it that way, but it makes a really, really measurable difference. Then moving sort of a step back from what that pure operator experience looks like, we start talking about system workflows. So our standard, one of our developers recently told me that we had over 150 different ways in the standard out-of-the-box configuration of being able to ship an order through the system. Okay, not every client's going to use all 150 different ways, but we find our clients are able to use, most of them will use 2, 3, 4, maybe up to 5 and 6 for complicated environments, so they can have the right orders going down the right streams rather than try to cram everything into one workflow. Which again, you go back to what I affectionately refer to as the old guard of our industry, and they're very much the, well, you've got a one size fits all approach. If that size doesn't fit, then change your order profile so it does fit. Whereas we look at that and say, well, no, that's a ridiculous proposition. Then moving further back from there, when we start talking about the framework of the system itself, as I mentioned earlier, we follow the Lego brick principle using things like microservices, where we can bolt in and bolt out different pieces as we go. Then, of course, we have to talk about integrations, which it feels like in a lot of systems, a bit of an afterthought, whereas we approached it from day one that integrations have to happen. Going right back to where my story came from, I remember being in the office late at night, just keying data between systems. So to me, when I was designing this in the first place, it had to be able to talk to other systems. So natively, we've got communication in the old FTPs and SFTPs and CSVs, but right through to all your brand new APIs and REST and all those other lovely acronyms and everything in between, because we understand that we've got some clients with the old mainframes that only speak flat file, and that's what we have to talk, but also what the 21st century is. So those are, obviously I can talk more about it, but those are a few sort of key points that I see as we move through the different tiers of the system.
Now, I've been a reasonably enthusiastic automotive, well, a degree of passion about cars and stuff. Often I'll perhaps go and make wrong relations, but I would examine the current WMSs are a bit like a boy racer tricked up version of a 1970s Holden or a Vauxhall or an Opel or a Chevrolet, depending on where you're living. And so you've got that architecture, you've got those restrictions. So the key question is, how can you make it more environmentally friendly? How can you make it safer? How can you actually make it more cost effective? How can you make it be able to service life? And that wouldn't be a great starting point to actually build something for the modern age, whereby things are a lot different. You know, our sources of energy are increasingly different. We're much more focused from an environmental perspective. And so we're looking for a lot more safety, better handling characteristics, much more technology. And so, I do feel that there are a number of systems out there that have got, you know, a pretty GUI, but it's actually pretty ooey underneath. You know, it's about basically going under, it's back to that green screen. And I'm of an age, you know, I can still, you know, sort of hanker back towards something with a green screen. But you know, I like old Nokia phones as well, but I'm not necessarily using them on a day-by-day basis.
Yes, so I have a fondness for retro tech as well, but I much prefer my late model Android over the old Nokia.
Yeah, indeed.
Lot more I can do on it.
So what do you think are the most difficult issues with using some of your competitors' WMSs?
For me, the biggest thing that I always look at is, what's the training burden? Can I bring somebody in and have them up to speed quickly? Again, it goes back to that casualization of the workforce that I mentioned earlier. When we start talking about that, you might have somebody that comes into your operation, maybe only for a couple of days. So you can't afford to have to spend half a day to a day just to get them up to speed. So one of the key design tenets that I went into this with was I needed to be able to bring somebody in off the street, give them 15 minutes of training and send them on their way. Okay, they're not going to be a super user in 15 minutes, but they're going to be able to competently carry out the task that I need them to carry out. And there was a fantastic example of this in early COVID days. Feels so long ago when you say it that way, doesn't it? We had a client of ours that they'd run about 60, 70 people in a shift, and their warehouse, several team members of their warehouse all came down with COVID, and the health department shut the warehouse down, told everyone not allowed to come back for a week. Now, this is a name, but if I was to say it, many people would know it, but I'm unfortunately under an NTA, so I can't, but I can say it's a major apparel and sports goods retailer. So they're in a crisis at this point. What are they going to do? So they got all their office staff to come out to the warehouse. And these are people who, you know, a couple of them might have worked in a warehouse before, or they know of the warehouse. But they had like the CFO of the business was out picking boxes. And they managed to do it. They had none of their normal team there to support them. I remember I got a phone call from the CFO one night asking me a question of how to run a manifest. They managed to fumble their way through it and kept the lights on, which I think that was a really good example of what the difference is between those training burdens. I don't think that an old guard system would have been able to translate like that.
Sure. And I guess it's that pick up and go, really, in terms of the ease of use. That's something that has been deliberately designed in. And I would guess that probably comes from your operational background in terms of saying, well, okay, why are we making this so difficult? You know, why is the burden? Because for sure, in terms of businesses that often will be using casual or temporary labor, perhaps to come in and manage the peaks, there is a training burden of most systems, and so reducing that is positive. But also, ease of use is key, I think, to process compliance. If you make it easy for people to do the right thing, you're going to have a better and smoother operation as a result of that.
I remember one system I saw had it would show their pickers the total amount to pick and what they picked so far. It didn't tell them what they still had to pick, though. So you'd see the pickers, they'd be out there, and they'd go, okay, so I've got 96 total picks. So far I've picked 72, so that means I've got, let me get the calculator out. And it was really, really interesting watching that, because they also made a lot of mistakes.
Yep.
And it's not to say that their team were incompetent or malicious or anything like that.
Nope.
It's just that when you've got that burden in between the operator and getting the job done, it only takes a momentary lapse in concentration to make a mistake.
Yeah, I agree. I think systems, wherever possible, should be easy to use. Coming to the gamification view, I think they should be fun to use as well. But perhaps in terms of looking at future ideas, that is something that is, you know, is key. I mean, I've looked at your system, and to me, it does seem to be, it's incredibly easy to use, but I know how intelligent it is within the background. And I understand that we can't in a podcast ever cover the full breadth of functionality that exists within there. But what I would say to the listener is, within Tomex, an awful lot that is perhaps either extra or additional configuration or all of this within a normal WMS actually is already been engineered in as far as Tomex is concerned. And so that actually reduces risk, because when anything moves away from standard product, it increases risk, but it also increases speed. And I've got to relate, because we had some preparation prior to this, and I'm going to put Thomas on the spot a little bit now, but we were talking about ease of implementation. So we had a bit of a challenge in terms of how quickly you could do it. Now, to be fair, this is in the environment of being very, very well prepared beforehand, so I'm not going to mislead people. But Thomas actually put together a demo that within, I'll say, minutes. I'm not going to say how many minutes, but it wasn't many. But it was...
It was a low single-digit
number. It was a low single-digit number. And it was from a warehouse map, from an understanding of process, from an understanding of configuration. We could receive a PO in, We could put stuff away. We could understand what it is. We could pick it. We could dispatch it. And actually also have an API going into an AMR or cobot actually then was activated, and that was done within minutes. And that is the proof in terms of, you know, a lot of system implementations, you know, literally these days will take months, and certainly months if you want to do them properly and safely, whereas Tonax have a different approach, I would say. It's more agile, it's quicker. This is why they're often called in. They're a bit like international rescue. Although Thomas doesn't look as though he's related to any of the Tracys. But he has brains, but he's not brains, if you see what I mean. Anyway, why are you so passionate about your role in Tomax, Thomas?
I like to say to people, I really, and I genuinely mean it when I say this, I really like what I do. Because I get to deal with some really interesting problems, really interesting people, really interesting solutions every day of the week. Like today, I spent some time, and this is something I definitely can't talk too much about, but I spent some time today with an automation partner looking at some products that they're just about to release to market. And it's one of those things I just get to say, wow, like I'm one of the first people in the world that's seen this technology. And I know that pretty imminently I'm going to be implementing it somewhere, might seem I should say, but I like to see it as well. And it's also, but even down from that, it's addictive of how can I make a process better? Where can we see something improve? And to me, that's just genuinely good fun.
And that passion shows. And myself and Thomas have had some hugely entertaining conversations going through this. And he was even kind enough to come and land on the doorstep of my hometown, which for those that you don't know is the wonderful market town of Congleton in Cheshire. And we had a few beers and a few bites to eat and a few good bits of discussion. And we're holding a podcast where we're 10,000 miles apart. But I do know he's coming back to the UK a little later this year, so we'll have a catch up and probably some more beer as well. I'm sorry. So you mentioned teams before, and I would absolutely always say that all organizations are as good as their teams. Could you tell us a little bit more about the team at Tomax?
Yeah, and you're 100% right, is that there's no way that I could be here today without the support of our team. So we've got a team dotted all the way around the world, as I mentioned earlier, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, US, and UK, providing coverage all around. And one thing I should say is that we're very careful that it's one team. But Tomax Australia is not a different Tomax to the UK or to Canada or to anywhere else, which allows us to provide true global service to our clients, both for our clients that are global in nature, because we do have clients that do use us in different parts of their business around the world, but even just for our clients who need support at odd hours of the day. So for instance, if let's say that one of your countrymen needed support at 2 a.m. your time, they'll probably come through to somebody in Australia and they'll get the same level of support as if they called at 9 a.m. or 3 p.m. Our team are really passionate and really, really interested in the industry as well. I've been very, very lucky to build the team that I've built. A lot of our team as well have operational experience too. Everything from our CFO ran a warehouse to 10 years. Our head of product, he ran a warehouse for 8 years. Now we've got an implementations tech who drove a truck for 9 years. So we've all lived and breathed it. It's quite common. You walk into our office and we're sitting in there wearing high-vis and steel caps, because for us, that's just what you wear to go to work. So with that's something that's really one of our key secrets to success is that amazing team.
And again, from previous conversations, I know they are bright. You've got the whole load of IQ. It's centered around Australia. Would have been my favorite, my favorite country to have emigrated to, without a shadow of a doubt. I felt proper unhappy when I left Sydney on my brief vacation, but really bright, really innovative, really focused on problem solving. And whenever you're trying to apply technology to a warehouse, you need bright people that want to solve your problems. So, Thomas, what do you see as the major challenges in supply chain currently and maybe in the foreseeable future? Because there's an awful lot going on.
There certainly is. So for me, one of the key problems that we see over and over again from our clients is that their clients are demanding more. Their clients are demanding more with less. And also, globally, we're seeing staffing availability being a problem. And that's, I can only see that without a radical change to the way the industry operates, I can only see that increasing. Globally, there's an increasing regulatory landscape for everyone to comply with, and with good reason. I'm sure you and I could probably sit here and swap plenty of stories that will scare many listeners of things that we've seen. So,
indeed.
And of course, I know it's been a bit of a recurring theme through this, but what's the environmental impact? It's a matter of time before our industry has to move away from the greenwashing to actual, real, genuine action, because it's got a lot of environmental impact, particularly when we start talking about products that have manufacturing done on one part of the world, then the sub-assembly sent to the other side of the world just to be sent back again a few weeks later. Those sorts of things, I can see that becoming a huge problem.
So we're looking at, there's a focus on problems, and I don't disagree with anything that you've said. And I think placing sustainability at the core of our business intelligence systems in one form or another, that for me, I would begin to feel more confident that we're not just paying lip service. It's a bit like the number of logistics providers I see. Hey, we've got a new electric truck. And I'm thinking, well, so what? You know, big deal. Yeah.
Yes. What percentage of your fleet is that truck?
Yeah. And being kind to them. You know, these are not easy calls to actually make. And I think the industry has other problems in terms of, low levels of profitability, and they need to begin to be able to make the profit that will allow them to invest in future, more sustainable solutions available within the market. Are you seeing, I know you can't tell us, but are you seeing some exciting new solutions in the market? You're up at that bleeding edge, aren't you? Can you give us a hint?
Yeah, we certainly are. So some of the areas that excite me the most inside the four walls of the warehouse are around the robotics and automation space, which is becoming increasingly democratized. I remember a time not that long ago where even a basic conveyor system was the realm of the big guys. But we're seeing this become available to the midsize. And it's been fascinating being right at the forefront of that. Like we were, to put that comment in context, by the way, we did the first implementation of AMRs to a 3PL in Australia, back at a time where you'd say AMR and people would say, huh? So that's been very exciting to be right at the forefront there. Moving outside the four walls of the warehouse, I'm seeing some really, really fascinating work being done in transport. It's a space that, frankly, hasn't innovated for, I'll be kinder than it, say, 20 years, but it's probably more than that.
It's more.
Yes. I'm being very kind, but I'm seeing some really interesting concepts coming out of that in terms of particularly things like eliminating dead loads, and bringing the line haul closer to the end point so that we can reduce the final mile. So there's some very, very interesting things to come in that space as well.
So getting you into your time machine and looking forward, what is your far future view of the world of logistics? Where would you imagine Tomex might be in, a decade or more in the future?
One thing about our industry is that it's slow to move fast. And what I mean when I say that is that we see periods of limited innovation followed by little blips of activity. So I think the next 2, 3, 4 years, we're probably going to see some incremental improvement. But coming into particularly we start talking about the 5+ years time, I can see a lot of technologies now that are experimental becoming something that's actually a genuine business product. Like, for instance, just thinking if I'm allowed to talk about this. Yes, I think I'm allowed to talk about this. We're engaged with, I can't tell you who I'm engaged with, but we're engaged with somebody that we're doing exploratory work with them around using consumer drones for stock-taking purposes. Now, whether that ever actually takes off, pardon the poor joke, or not, it remains to be seen, but those sorts of things I can see coming and making a difference. I keep coming back to automation as well, and I can see automation, particularly in 10 years. I think that that'll be a completely different thing. I think the warehouse of 10 years or 50 years, I'm not even going to try to speculate on, but I think we're going to start to see that we're going to see a much more heavily automated future. That said, we've perpetually been 5 years away for a very long time of having true automation. Because if you think about if I put a product on a desk in front of you right now, Malcolm, you'll be able to pick it up no matter where I put it on the desk, what orientation I put it. You'll also be able to use your eyes to tell me if that's a damaged product. There's some very interesting research happening in that space, but it's a long way from the prime time. I've been hearing ever since I've been in this industry that that's 5 years away. But I think we're actually getting to a point where that is in that 5+ years radius now.
I think it's interesting. I think the automation piece is absolutely spot on. And having been somebody that worked on teams implementing what I would say is more traditional automation, the big ticket item stuff, with conveyors and high bays and layer picking devices, etc. What you're now seeing is something that's quite different. And we were talking to an AMR provider and they're actually looking at AMR rental so that for your peak periods, there you go, we can go and actually stand these down. They're designed to operate on almost like a standard plug rather than three phase, and you just plug them in and they go. But I think automation offers, it's not just the democratization of the automation. I think the automation actually has, in terms of the democratization of commerce, and so I think it levels the playing field between the really big corporates and perhaps some of the small Joes and Josephines out there that are running their own business, and gives them an opportunity to be as sophisticated and give them a platform for growth. And that piece absolutely fascinates me.
Yes, it's we're in an interesting part of the market cycle right now where while that democratization is certainly happening, it's you've got to be on the bigger side of medium for it to make sense. So it is creating a gap, but as that comes down, I can certainly see a place where that's going to happen.
Absolutely. So look, Thomas, if I was a logistics business or warehouse operator based in the good old United Kingdom, how could we find out more, and how would you support that potential business or operator locally?
Yes, so we obviously have a local team in place, but we could certainly do with expanding our reach in the market. And what I would like to ask is, would Laguru be interested to help us implement and support our solution in the UK?
Well, that's a bit of a shock. I'll be really honest. I mean, having looked at your competitors, that would be a relatively easy decision for me to make. The answer is yes, and we can start tomorrow. So on that bombshell, you can be assured that shortly it'll become very clear as to how you can find out more about a new leading and innovative player in logistics systems and automation. Thomas, thank you so much for giving up your time, and I wish you a pleasant evening. It's the end of your day, it's the start of mine. So look, all the very best, Thomas, and thank you for making time.
Thank you, Malcolm. It's always a pleasure.
So if you like what you've heard today and would like to hear more podcasts like this, please consider following us on logisticscollective.com. We will then provide you with an update as and when a new episode is produced. The Logistics Collective podcasts are available on most podcast platforms, including Spotify and Apple. Thank you.
You can get in contact by email, podcast@logisticscollective.com, or leave a voice message on our website, logisticscollective.com. The podcast is a production by Laguru.